Right, and then we right, so we say, you know, that they were mafia the Kesef Kiddushin, right? What about in the Kaddish? I mean, that's where that takes place. But there is a there is certainly a specific mechanism in terms of Kiddushin that we can do for Kiddushin we object to. And there's a general question about whether we should ever allow things that go against Torah to be chal. Right, so the so the Braita is coming along and telling us that you might think that the fact that we allow the Kiddushin to be chal means that we don't object. And the Braita comes along and says, no, there are categories of Kiddushin that are so bad that we undo them. And there are categories of Kiddushin that we're fine with. And then there are categories of Kiddushin that are bad, but we don't undo them. Okay, yes, let me know.
You say Nahag Bo, Minhag Ramud, right?
Yes.
The problem with this, the action, relates to the Shaliach's relationship to the Mishaleach. It does not have to do with his relationship to his now bride. So there's really no problem with the Kiddushin as such, because between the man and the woman, everything is totally fine. The problem is that he, as a Shaliach, or as a Chaver, or whatever, did something which, he capitalized on the trust of his friend and took advantage of him. So that's the Rama'ud.
Very nice. To some extent, that depends on whether you think it only applies to the, if you think it only applies to the first line, not to the second, so then the guy has no prior relationship with the woman. It applies to the second, right, where he already said, Mekadesh Eli Lachar Shloshim Yom.
Right, so you're saying he might have an even better claim of a relationship?
In the first case...
Yeah, right. He comes up to the woman, he says, what kind of guy puts you off for 30 days? And she says, yeah, you're right.
Right.
But wait, is it
the piece of very copy? A little bit, yes? Okay, yes.
So, like, the other case in Shas that really comes up is in Bava Batra.
Uh-huh.
And under that situation, she accepts his Kiddushin, but it's kind of under duress. Like, somehow it isn't enough duress to invalidate the Kiddushin itself.
Yeah. So
I think the case in Kiddushin is where she's also under duress because she's been kidnapped on horseback, and so somehow she accepts the Kiddushin. Whereas that's dissimilar to this case where, of her own free will, as Avinoam said, he came up to her and said, hey, you know,
right, so if you think the flaw in the case
deal, of your own full dat miyushav, would you like a better deal?
So if you think the flaw in the case in Kiddushin is not taking away the anticipated bride, but marrying the bride under conditions of less than optimum informed consent, Einachanami, there's not such a peril. Einachanami.
Okay. So we end up that there is a case in the Mishnah where the marriage happened in something we call Rama'ut. We have this reasonable instinct that that's not a good thing, but it doesn't seem to have any legal consequence at all that we know of. We're not aware of any specific legal consequence.
Is it possible that that we weren't really intending to advocate any consequences? We're just criticizing.
That's right. It could be we're just stating a moral judgment that has no halakhic consequences at all. People get married. The less of marriages we think are bad ideas. Right? We don't ban all of them. Right? We think that we have a general commitment to freedom of contract. Yes.
Doesn't the Rishalmi say that it's like also true that Minister did implying that the
fetus? Oh, we'll get there. Okay. Then we have a small unit which connects this to a this in terms of the invaluableness of Rashi, because there's no way idea. The Gemara says, "Hakar Ravusa Kamashon Long, Hasam Ravusa Kamashon Long." Where's Hasam? Nothing in the sugya, whatever, tells you what Hasam is. Rashi just tells you Hasam refers to a Mishnah in the a Mishnah in the second Torah, Gish Mekadesh. And okay, let's assume that's true, and then we have an explanation of what Hasam has to mean in those cases. Yes, ma'am.
There's a line missing from this Maramakam over here.
Yeah. Okay.
word that we use.
Good.
It says,
yes, you're right. It's in the Rashi, and I seem to have left it out of the line without the version of that Rashi. Good. Still, so we know the difference. Sorry, the difference is between Shliach and Chaver. Thank you, right? But that was a typo. But we still don't know where it says Chaver as opposed to Shliach. So that goes to the right. And then we have the question, which seems to, Rabbi Gemara seems to suggest that I might think there's a way. Where you might think that it's more ramoy by shliach, I might think that it might work less by chaver. We're fine. Yes. Okay. Now we get to a series of stories. Rabin Chasida, goes to search out a bride for his son, and comes back with a bride for himself. And the Ora says, "Hey, how can he do this?" V'hatanya. So there's an obvious first level gap between the stories, which is, right, why is this not the same case as the Mishnah?
Because
there was no one's father. Well, the first case, Omer the Kaveh would say the
Kadeshli. There was a discussion earlier in the Gemara whether fathers are assumed to be able to be in the
Kaveh. Right, so the question, a father and son is not the same as a Kaveh. And there's no evidence of Shlichus that the son, there's no evidence the son asked him to do it. Right, he might have said it himself, right? It's an arranged marriage.
It's machloket early in Kiddushin whether it's assumed that the father is a shliach always for his son until a certain age.
Okay, I don't know what age he is.
I have to look it up.
Okay, good.
So anything that he wants for himself, his father can take for himself.
Aha. So he has no rights at all.
Yeah.
They might think that, right, the father's paying for the wedding anyway.
Who says this in the Mishnah?
There are... You can put in the facts. You can say, "Oh, the son made the right." Rav Chasida did it as a shliach.
I mean, the son clearly knew, right?
No.
Clearly.
Because otherwise, what's the hemshech doesn't make any sense. That he'd have to tell his son that what was going on before he
Okay. Interesting argument. He should have told his son he was doing this. But maybe he just told his son, "I'm going out to find you a wife." It didn't say anything about this woman.
So again, but then what's the tzarach clearly do? What did he do wrong?
His son's gonna still feel somewhat betrayed, not because he doesn't have this particular woman, but because, you know, "Dad, I thought we were saving money for my wedding."
That's called the Mivnei Ramos.
The answer
to the first question here is that this woman won't agree to be the son's wife, so it's pretty clear that there's a specific woman involved, because otherwise, this woman won't agree to be my son's wife, so I'll find a different woman to...
The specific one involves the woman who ended up marrying. It's not necessarily the woman who...
Maybe he could have gotten both. Right, that's the question, right? You know, did he just cut his trip short when he got engaged? Right, or could he have gone on...
With the second case also, there seems to be this piece of land is what's important. So I'm assuming here, in this first case, it's this specific woman.
Okay, well, that was more direct rejected in the second case. I don't want to go there yet. Yes, from
us. So I was wondering if he got her for his son. So maybe she's a katana, and he married her with her mother and brothers, and he's planning to have her do miyun as soon as he gets there, so that she can marry his son then.
All right.
That's Will Rutz.
That's
Russian. No, it's Lo Yehavuha. Right, that they didn't give her, as opposed to Lo Hiskima.
Yeah. So Rashi says Lo Rutzu and not Lo.
Well, it's plural anyway. You don't need to came without Rashi.
So
Gemara says he should still have told him. Now, so that's a factor that, I mean, not going to Rama for the Mishnah. It's not clear whether the failure is the action or the engaging in the action without notice. Right? The Mishnah just says not going to right? Says not going to do something. It's slimy because he gave it. Right. One way of reading the Mishnah is he gave you the opportunity to meet this woman. She would never have let you in the door. She hadn't said, "Hi, I'm a shliach of John Doe." So it's slimy to take advantage of your credentials. The other possibility is just, look, John Doe told you to do this, and when you come back, he's going to feel betrayed.
But what credentials? They don't want to give her away anyways to with those credentials.
Well, so now you have to figure out whether, you know, did he do a good job negotiating, right? And maybe he gave the credentials because they thought, right, in the end he said, well, you know, honestly, right, you know, he's tall, but from side to side. They say he's got a temper, right? But only when he's sober, you're all right. I know what the shliach said. Yes, Tova.
I think that's the point of the first, definitely the second case, probably, in the first case as well, right? That the buyer is not interfering with the sale, right? It's not that the woman would have married his son. It's not if he had interfered.
Okay, so you think that, right? That can't be that, right? That would obviously be wrong.
I mean, or else that's what it would say. Then the third case, I mean, where does that explicitly?
I mean, that's our answer, how it's different from the Mishnah. And that's not what happened.
Okay, so right, so in the end, we don't... Wait, Ravin, who was introduced as Ravin Chasida. Right, let's start right. Ravin Chasida, which presumably doesn't mean Ravin the stork. Ravin the pious. So this is supposed to be an example of... he's supposed to be an exemplar. And this exemplar, Ravin Chasida, goes and engages in this behavior which appears to be Ramut. And we say... Right, so at the least, right, even if you're going to tell me, okay, he couldn't fulfill his shlichut, but it's still wrong, maybe or maybe not ramut, right? So we don't know at this point, when it says ibayil l'oduye, does that mean ibayil l'oduye, and right, since he wasn't, therefore we're still accusing him of ramut, or look, he still should have told him, even if that wouldn't rise to the level of ramut. Right, the response is, no, he had no obligation to tell him because he was afraid that while he's going back to tell him, right, this woman who has turned down his son anyway is going to go marry somebody else. Okay, yes, yeah.
Are the Vahatamians here, like, outrage statement, outrage questions, or shrugs of the shoulder? Like,
I think they're outrage. Vatanya, I think this is Vatanya as a Kushya. Right? How could he do this? That would be Minigram Alud, and he is a Chassid.
Maybe it's just saying it's so common. Even Rabbi Chassid does it.
So usually Vatanya is a Kushya. And Rashi will say benichusa in the rare cases that it isn't. Okay. Rabbi Bar Chana gives...
Wait, so is it considered exemplary to have not told the son because of the solid reason?
Apparently
or
it doesn't...
Is his excuse, but whatever.
Apparently you don't lose your status as a chassid. Right? If you are sent out... let's say, at least in this case, if you go out to procure a wife... for your son, possibly a specific wife, and you end up bringing the wife home as your bride, and even though you did not inform your son of the fact, right, not only have you not engaged in minhag ramaut, you can still legitimately be called a chassid. A reasonable jump is to say that this is also true in the case of the Mishnah, a reasonable jump is to say this is also the case if somebody appoints you a shliach for kiddushin, and you discover that you will not be a successful shliach for kiddushin because he misunderstood, right? He misunderstood the intentions, right? The intentions of the woman, right? Really, when he flashed, "Will you marry me?" on the scoreboard, yeah, right? In Gillette Stadium, and she said yes. She just did that because she didn't want to make him feel bad on television, but she didn't really intend to accept the condition. And so when he sends you over the ring, she said, "What? I'm going to marry somebody?" That's right. Puts a big proposal up on Gillette Stadium. Are you out of your mind? Right, so she's not going to marry him at all. Right, you come and you don't come back and tell him that. You just come back. Right, the next thing he sees, right, you're there, right, with the invitation to your wedding instead of his. Right, that's okay. Right, because he was mistaken. Is Mara? It's reasonable to say that. Right. Yes.
Is the implication like ask for permission, or is the implication just let him know what you're doing?
So if you're not worried about somebody else coming in, then you should tell him. It doesn't say ask for permission. You should have told him.
I guess I'm kind of confused as to like what's the so you bring her home, but leave her in the car, like, and tell him, by the way, something happened when I was away.
Well, seems like it could have been.
Aha. So you wonder why do you have to inform him before you ask? Just inform him before he finds out otherwise.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. I don't know.
Like, on the scoreboard, you proposed to her instead. Like,
maybe
still on you.
Well, it's possible as that. It's also possible that often in rabbinic literature, you have this assumption that gossip travels faster than people.
Okay.
Or how that happens is not clear. right? Smoke signals, like, you know, whatever it may be.
Semaphores.
Yeah, but somehow people find out.
Coal is a very powerful force.
Yeah, so I was saying, right? People, right? Rumor, right? You know, now we have interesting studies, which I'm sure some of you have read about exactly how fast rumors spread. Quite fast.
I mean, I don't think I had Twitter, so.
But you can talk, right? But you
yeah.
You can have voice, right? You know, the ball travels faster than the defense, right? So there are lots of ways to go faster than people. Yes.
So if you're not accepting my case with the katana, then what kind of excuse is this? son, I was going to go off and marry this woman for you. So then I was like, hey, you know, some other guy will marry her anyway, so I might as well.
No, no, then she said, they said no. So I realized you weren't going to marry her, right? So if you weren't going to marry her, we really want her in the family.
But then they didn't try very hard.
I don't know. Clearly. Maybe he tried, maybe he bargained for weeks and weeks. That's how they fell in love. at some point, you realize I always tried something in the Devil and Daniel Webster, which is the best American short story ever. So there's a moment where Daniel Webster is pleading for Jabez Stone again with a jury, right? He's pleading, there's a jury from hell. And he's pleading to save this New Hampshire guy who sold his soul to the devil from going to hell. And he's pleading and pleading through the night, and the jury is standing there, and at some point he just realizes the jury has no interest in his client. They're only there for him. Right? They're hoping he'll get mad enough that he'll sell his soul to the devil also. So if you have long negotiations with somebody over time, relationships build.
There was an article about that this morning.
Is there really?
Yeah.
In the Times.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
No.
Yeah, so
this is like sadly, I don't know, what's the word of this? What's more redundant about my mind? Is it your father's feeling your bride, or your father's feeling your bride?
That's a very good question, right? So that's part of the question. Is there, right? Is this case of the Rebbe and Chassidah just the case of the Mishnah? Now, there are lots of ways which we can just say. We can say he's a Chassid. That's different. We can say he's a father. That's different. We can say he's a father and not a... We can say he's not a Shliach.
Yeah.
Right? That's different. Those are all ways in which, right, we can say that there's no specific woman. Right? These are all ways in which we can distinguish the case of the Gemara from the Mishnah. And then based on those distinctions, we could then claim, oh, and therefore, even though this excuse works for the case in the Gemara, it wouldn't work for the case in the Mishnah. Or we can say that the purpose, we can say this is a Kal Vachomer. Right? Right? The question is, do you want to see this just as a story about the Mishnah? And right, or if we want to say it sharply, I'll do this for the first time this summer. I learned from Professor Pinyin Menachem. It was a life-changing event for me in terms of understanding Gemara. I read his book, Judicial Deviation in Talmudic Law. And I had never thought of the difference in a Gemara between academic rules and case law. So you have the academic rule, that's the Mishnah, and you have the case law. Right, this is what actually happened. Right? That's the way of framing it. Then we can decide, is the case law just intended to instantiate the academic law? Is it designed to modify the academic law? Right, is it designed to be in tension with the academic law because the actual tradition, right, doesn't follow it out? Because look, here the Mishnah says the Braita at least says it's Minhag Ramaut, and here we have a story. Here's a Chassid. He goes and does fundamentally that. And what's the answer? The answer fundamentally is, when it comes to marriage, all's fair. Because there's never a restriction on marrying somebody because there's always a chance. And when will you not have a risk that somebody, right, unless you, right, every moment right, that you are not married to this woman, right, she is free to marry somebody else. So your job is, right? So there are no restraints, right? That would be the radical claim, is that there really is no possible case of Minhag Ramaut when it comes to marriage, because...
But stealing people on horseback is bad.
Well, no, the case where it is, if she'd be willing to get married to the first guy.
If she'd be willing to marry the first guy, so why is she marrying you?
She's only marrying both. She doesn't care.
She doesn't care.
I say, again, if she's willing to marry you, why are you worrying someone else will get to her first?
Because she might be willing to marry you and anybody else.
Right,
it's not about you and the woman. It's about you and your friend.
Uh-huh.
The whole thing, the Gemara says, Samche Adate, right?
Yeah.
So the entire definition of Ramahud is you are in a relationship with somebody, whether that's, say you're their Shaliach, in which you are not supposed to be competing with them. You are supposed to be acting for their benefit on their behalf.
Uh-huh.
Now, at the instant that they no longer have a chance, you are no longer competing with them because they are no longer competitors. They're not part of the game anymore, and therefore you can do whatever you want because you're not in competition, and therefore it can't be
resolved. So I don't agree with you for one reason, because the Gemara seems to believe there would be a duty to inform if you would not have a loss. Right? So it's not the issue is not only competition. Now, as I pointed out in conversation with Jenna earlier, that the duty to inform may not mean that a failure to inform rises to the level of Rama'ut. It might be something else, which is lesser. But there does seem to be a duty to inform.
Well, the person may still have an interest, and you may say that your duty as a shaliach, whether you succeed or not, is to let the mishaliach know what the outcome of his mission was. So you might make the claim that you are still involved as a party who has some sort of non-competition pact with the Mishalech until such a time as you have.
Okay, so let's take two of it. I think the point made earlier. Let's bring it out again. So one possibility is to say that the broadest reading of the story is to say as follows: that if you have a duty to your friend, the duty to your friend, however serious, can never force you to act against self-interest in the realm of marriage. Everybody has a primary overriding interest in, or every male has a primary overriding interest in marrying the woman they wish. And no duty to your friend can prevent you from exercising that interest.
Prevent you morally or prevent you legally?
Morally.
No, because...
You don't even have to tell him.
That's Minerva Mode.
So I have to try and figure out what, right, if this case basically goes, right, is intended to be in tension with the law. So the answer is the law is a theoretical position, but in practice, you can always say, I was worried.
But now, only once she said no to the first guy.
So the first possibility, right, so the most radical reading would be is that if the answer is, adahachi vadahachi asa inesh afrinu mekadishle, right, and the reason that you're allowed to do this is because marriage matters. So then the answer ultimately overrides the answer that she said no to the son. Ultimately, right? Because in the end, you can just say, so what? Yeah, you can say. Second thing is no. At least you have a duty to try, and once you've tried, you've satisfied your duty as a shliach. Now you only have a duty based on the notion of betrayal. And that duty can be overridden, right? Can be overridden by this, by the concern of marrying the right person. But the initial responsibility of the undertaking to the other party, right? That can't be overridden by self-interest. That will still be called binagramot.
What does try mean?
So let's say try is a difficult category. Hi, you want to marry my son? Nah. Oh, okay then. Right, so we have to try and figure out exactly what the boundaries are, and is this something that is ultimately we might say, you know what, if we set up a formal obligation to try, it's the reason we can only call it min hagramut and not enforce it is because how could we tell? I went, I knelt, I opened the box, I showed her the ring. She said, "What, that ring?" Right, I put it back his box. I took out my box. Right.
Once he wants to marry her himself, like his trial will be like half-hearted.
So that's the underlying psychological reality is, right? How plausible is it really?
I mean, it could be the story in the Gemara, right? Is not quite a case of that, right? The story in the Gemara is where some other factors are not letting her marry him because the kid's not mechubad enough to marry the family, but the father is. So that's being the Gemara makes it somewhat objective and not as subjective.
Yes, the Gemara does seem to make it objective. The question is, the next story is explicit about kavod, right? We connect the two stories, right? But we really are is right. We, in another way of framing it, is we're just in the middle of Sermon on the Bergerac, right? Right there, you go. Right, he goes to recite the poetry under the balcony, and somewhere in the middle. Right, they realize that he's not dressed as Shliach. Right, that's the right. That's the play we're in the middle of. So that's the question of which way the case is supposed to be read. Okay, Rav Baruch Hanan gives Uzi to Rav, and he says, "Zavna niyale l'hai ara." So here we have no choice. Right, right. You have Omer l'shlucho say. Right, ukne li karkozu. And he goes and he buys land for himself. Okay, so now the Gemara says, how could he have done this? And now the Gemara says that the Hatanya Masha Asa Soil Shinagum Nagramut. Now that Breita does not right. Is it extrapolating that from our case of marriage, or is it that we have another case like in a Breita that this is attached to this, right, which we haven't seen, which says the same thing is true of Mecca? Let's assume that. And we say, this was land owned by people for whom there are interests other than economic involved in the sale. Right, that's right. That's the fundamental claim, is that the transaction is not based purely on economics. Yes. There are other considerations.
to other considerations going on here, and they would not have been willing to sell the land to Rabba Bar Kana, because they only sell the land to people to whom they give kavod, either because the sale of land per se is an important social transaction and not just a financial transaction. You don't, it demeans you.
It's a co-op board.
Well, that's the board, not the seller will sell to anybody. It's the other people who won't. Right. This is the case.
These
are
the
neighbors. We don't want it.
Ah, you think it's the neighbors who are vending, not the owners.
That's Rashi says.
That's the Alime are. Is that Rashi says?
You have to deal with the call for
it. Bika shel ba'alei zroa. So they're unequal to call adam. So you think that means the neighbors, you know? Could be I misread that. I hadn't read it that way, but I'm open to the possibility. So it's a co-op board. Interesting. I was thinking more, British landowners, right? So if your estate becomes part of the Duke's estate, so that shows that you have really important land. But if your estate becomes a butcher shop, right, then it demeans the value of everything else. And maybe you're right. Right? Your reading is at least as reasonable as mine. Maybe better. Does it matter? Maybe not. I don't know. I have a case, right? So I'll have to figure out what I want to do with the case. So it matters to me what the case is. I'll figure it out. Right? And then at some point I'll have to figure out whether it matters legally. I'm not sure. Okay, so they did cover Torah, but not Torah Bar Barachana. So, right, which, by the way, is very likely the reason Rav Barachana gave the money to Rav in the first place, because he thought that Rav's prestige would wear off and they would sell to Rav as a shliach. And they thought, and look, if Rav is willing to be my shliach, then I obviously am the kind of person who deserves kavod. But while they're no hate kavod for Rav, they say we're not buying in that other guy that you give kavod to, we should give kavod to also. So we should have gone back and told them. So he said, no, somebody else will buy the land. Now this one's a little bit less plausible because this is a Bagat Alime, they're not going to sell it to just anybody.
And what should he have told him?
Yeah, I should have told him, look, I really meant to do it for you. They said no.
Just so he would feel better?
So he wouldn't feel betrayed.
Okay. There's a question of the appearance of impropriety.
Yeah.
So that if he hadn't informed Rabbi Barachana before, and then same thing with last week, he hadn't informed Rabbi Barachana before that, they weren't willing to sell it to you, and I'm planning on buying it, so someone could interpret that he just went and did the whole thing for himself in the first place and didn't even try doing it for him. But once he goes and informs him, so Rabbi Barachana is aware that he tried, and then he went back and did it again for himself.
So there are three things. One is you did something wrong by buying the land. The other is you did something wrong by breaching the relationship with your friend. And the third is you did something wrong by creating the appearance of having been dishonest with your friend. Right, those are three levels of what could be wrong here. Yes, hi.
Yeah, maybe the problem with not telling your friend is because it's assumed that your friend will make other suggestions, will do something to prove worthy or something.
Okay, maybe he'll raise the price. Right, that's very simple. Then you can offer more money. Or more camels. Right, in the first case. It's possible, right? Or he could provide more evidence, or all sorts of things, right? So it's not just informing him, it's giving him the opportunity to rethink his strategy. Okay, right, that's fair also, yes.
Also, when does the shichut end? Does the shichut end when he comes back, or does it end when they say no? Or because then there might not have been any Rabbi Uda if they said no, and he just went by himself, so he was done with the shichut.
Excellent, good. So right, who knows the sugya?
It's a Gemara.
Yeah, Gemara and Gittin, new. End of the third parak.
Sounds right.
Okay, Gemara says that that a woman cannot be a shliach to deliver her own get because lochazra shlichut etzel habal. Right, because the shlichus has to. The definition of shlichus has to involve the capacity to return and report to your sender.
The capacity, not necessarily.
Yes. So when the shlichus ends, and what the at the outset of the shlichus, we define shlichus not just as fulfilling an action, but shlichus means fulfilling an action and reporting back.
Now, at such point as you don't fulfill the action, does that breach relationship? There's no point in reporting back. Do you have to report back failure or only success? Right, that would be right. That would be. We'd have more lumdish things, right? If even success, you're still the shliach. Whatever, lots of the shlichus afterwards in some way, which says me'achshav. Right, all sorts of fun ways you could play it. It's plausible to say that the shlichus relationship doesn't. That there is at least a vestige of the shlichus relationship until such time as you report back to the shliach. I think it's at least plausible. Yes, Jeff.
Which fits into what I mean, right? The saying that like that's why we're asking why didn't you go back. We're assuming that you're not allowed to act for yourself until you're completely done.
Yes. Right. So I think that's a reasonable argument, right? That it's grounded in the nature of shlichut. That wouldn't apply to a father, though, unless the father was a shliach.
Right. Well, right. Especially because the father was the one who was sending himself
to the shliach
anyway, right? Because I mean, it seems to, you don't see the son asking himself.
That's right. So I'm saying, right?
He's sending himself, but he's both the. But then you're getting to.
Yes, right. So it depends on how much. Again, so if you read the first case, do you implicitly say the son sent the father initially up or not, and that will affect how much you can put this in. Yes, Yaakov.
Also, we don't actually know like what he did. Maybe he did go back and tell him, and then we should have told him that he was buying himself, so that he'd have a chance to cut him off before he went back or something. We only know that he said buy this for me, and he bought it himself, but we don't know what he said to the. We don't know whether there were multiple stages of sending him there or anything. So why the shlichus should be cut off right?
Well, you might think a shlichus, right? What a shlichus is an act defined thing. I didn't send you to buy the land. I sent you to make the offer. It might be we could then, if we're talking halachically, it might depend on the wording of the shlichus, right? If I say you are my agent to buy this land, right? Then it might be the halach would be different than if you are my agent to. Make an offer on this land, or we might construe it differently. Even if you say, so normally we say buy means offer, but if I say you are my shliach to buy, you are my shliach, and I authorize you to engage in all activities eternally until such time as this land is purchased by me, right? So then the shlichus would never end, right? So that by the end we could determine, right? It could depend on the exact language used in the instructions.
But my point is, you don't know anything.
That's true. We don't.
So why are we assuming that he should have told him that? That he couldn't buy it for him, as opposed to he should have told him at a later stage he was buying it himself, and that would be more of a free market issue as opposed to.
You think he never told him? You think he might be able to do it? How do we know we never told him? We know that he bought it.
No, but I'm asking what did he not tell him?
So we've been assuming that he did not go back and tell him
that
he could not carry out his shlichut before he went back and bought it for himself.
Would it be equally Rama control of Rama Ut if he just went back knowing that his friend wanted to buy something and took it for himself, even though his friend knew that it was the shlichut was over?
The case is that there's not enough time, so it doesn't make sense for him to go back and not have enough time to say,
the answer tells you what the concern was.
I think so. Okay. Someone else in the head? Okay. So now, Rav Gidol was mehapich b'hahi ara. We don't quite know what the word mehapich means yet, so let's leave it untranslated for now. Rabbi Abba comes in and buys it. In this case, there seems to be no suggestion of shlichut. Rabbi Zidol comes in and complains about Rabbi Abba to Rabbi Zera, who apparently is their mutual Rabbi. Rabbi Zera tells him, wait till he comes. Okay, I don't know why this matters in the story. But it seems that the practical outcome is Rav Gidol and Rabbi Abba don't meet each other. So when Rabbi Abba shows up, Rabbi Zera, you could have a more dramatic story in which if you really want to read it, in which really he's waiting outside the door, he just says, right, and Rabbi Zera is trying to avoid the confrontation. But probably it means that when Rabbi Abba showed up.
Some time has passed, right?
Probably.
Okay, so that has implications for ownership.
Well, the land's bought already.
Yeah, but I don't know if Zuna has a if it means something different, like possession.
I don't think so.
Rosh says we tell Yantif, right? Rosh says we tell everyone comes to Shira and Yantif.
Yeah, because that's when he's going to come, right? So it could just be Lamasse. He comes and complains about the Talmud, and he says, you know what? This isn't a big enough deal for me to go send for him. Right? He'll come.
Right.
And then he shows up.
But it's a pretty big deal to Rukidel, right?
It is.
If he compares himself to Ani, and
yeah.
This is his first snow.
Well,
Rukidel
doesn't compare himself to Ani. Rabbi Zera introduces the Ani distinction. So it could be we could learn that it's not such a big deal for Rabbi Zera because he says just late, or it could be, you know what? It wasn't practical. But he tells him, you know, I can't do anything for you now. The first chance I can, I'll bring it up to you.
I guess they just seem to be two opposing implications here, right? One implication is that this is really important to Rabbi Kidal, and so we should, fair is fair, make sure we can make things equitable for him. And the other implication is, it's not a big deal, we can wait.
That's right, and I'm open to both.
Okay.
I'm open to there being attention. Rabbi Kidal was really important to him, and Rabbi Zera is not so important to him.
Okay.
Yes, Jonathan.
Maybe it was a big deal to Rabbi Abba that he bought his first land and stuff, and they didn't want to mess with that for at least a few months.
Maybe Rabbi Zera knew Rabbi Abba, right? So this was maybe he thought it was would be unwise to confront him initially. Yes, Eli.
Why should it really matter how important it is to each person?
Because since there are role models, so how important it is to them will affect how important it is to us.
What if he plants the land or builds something? I just mean, there's a really big difference between 2 days after a sale goes through.
So maybe it'd be better if he had told him afterwards, right? Because it's before he gets too emotionally or practically invested in it. Should have gone. Yeah. So it tells you in advance, you know what, maybe he knows in advance, he's not going to say, give it back.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. Yeah, that's possible. Right. Then I have to go read and figure out whether he does say give it back or not.
Also, three people removed.
By now, three people?
Yeah,
there's
a
the advice to the
doesn't he? Yeah.
Okay, right, so when we get there, okay, so Gil comes to Rizera, Rizera comes to Rizkov Nafka, and Rizkov Nafka says, you're right, Rizkov Nafka says, wait.
So it's hard to tell who's talking, is it Rizkov Nafka or Rizera?
That's a good point. Yeah, we don't know who's talking directly at that point. Okay, so when Rabbi Abba shows up, right, so somebody, Rizera Rizkov Nafka, comes to him, and does the indirect question. But he asked him a random halakhic question, and the answer is going to be, right, we're waiting for the Natan Navi moment, right? Atahish. Right, there was a poor man, he had a cake, right, and somebody comes in and takes the cake.
He should be killed.
Right. So it was much more dramatic. Right. His response had been, motimateish. But it seems more likely that everyone knows this thing. I meant that, so I won't pull on you, right? But I like walking over to students who are, supposed to know Gemara and say, Machidish ne'emar hayom. Right? Or Machidish ne'emar hayom, and the response is supposed to be, Nu? Halo me'mefan u'shosin, right? Right? That's right. You're supposed to respond, right? It's Gemara Chagiga, right? When your teacher asks you what Chiddush was said, you're supposed to say, how could there be a Chiddush? Everything we get is from you. Right, so the best students will respond that way instinctively, and I think that Nikra Rasha is an automatic response. Right, everybody knows that this halacha of Ani Mahapik Becharara. It's a famous case, I think. So he says Ani Mahapik Becharara, Uva Acher Benat Flami Meimenu. So there is this Ani, he's doing something with Becharara, and somebody else comes and takes it from him. What's the halacha? And the answer is he is called a Rasha. So now he pulls it, right? So why did you do that? Now, at this point, it's pretty clear that Rabbi Abba knows what it's about. Right? If we take the literal way, it could be, unless you say Haki is a placeholder, so right, it really means, why did you do this specifically? If you say Haki, it really means the pronoun, it means he got it immediately. And Lamar my Tama, right, why did you do this? So Amarle lo habidani, said, I didn't realize, now I do. So Amarle, right, so he says, so now why, right now, he says, Hashtanami neisfaliyem lemar. So you should give it to him. You should give it to him. Why should you give it to him?
You don't want to be a Russia?
Because you don't want to be a Russia.
Is he a Russia anymore?
Aha. So the implication seems to be that he's a right, that he is, well, so now the question is at this point, the same as we had by the Loduye. Is he still a Russia? Right? Or is it that, you know what, you're not a Russia anymore, but you're still bad?
Well, no. Or what didn't he know?
I would think that he didn't know that Rav Gidel was bugging for it. Yes. But now that he knows that Rav Gidel was bugging for it, even if before he's not a Russia, if he keeps it,
he becomes a Russia. Okay, could be.
It could just be that, right? It's Nicro Russia for a reason. Presumably because this is not a good thing to do, because the guy had the guy was supposed to get it first. So, like, just make up for it. Meaning, just get it to what the end result is supposed to be.
So that's a strong claim, where the guy was supposed to get it first. Why was he supposed to get it first?
Meaning, if I had known, I shouldn't have gotten it before him.
Right, because?
Because apparently that's the rule, that's the rule, that there's some sort of precedent in terms of...
Why?
The right of first bargaining. Whoever gets
there. Okay,
first.
So right, so
that's
right.
The rule.
So the simple thing is that one's right, that I can create a zone of non-interference just right. By expressing interest in a property. Right? Right, that would be the second
some level of interest, right? We don't know what Mapir
right.
how much you have to show.
I mean, that's the key.
Right, that's one right. The second possibility is I can't that there's some level beyond just interest that I have to engage in. The third is that it's not right that it's not about I establish a right. It's just that it's right. If somebody else knows that you're there, so then it's some kind of breach of. It's not a breach of the relationship with the object. It's a breach of my relationship with them. Right? Is it a din ben adam la'aret ben adam la'adama? Right or ben adam la'adam? Yes, yeah.
So are we taking the ani part just to be like kind of part of the example story and not relevant here, or do we see?
Okay, so I need to figure out right. So
because that would be a different to me. Like that would have a whole other level. Like. We were talking about, like, maybe what's wrong is that he was an ani, and this guy played on that vulnerability and gave an offer for the land that was, like, way beyond what Yida could, like,
okay.
Meet with, and that's what was wrong about
right.
It.
So we did the Natananvi trick, right? We took a perfectly ordinary guy, right, engaged in a perfectly ordinary relationship, and we turned into a desperately poor guy with one sheep.
Right.
Right, so, right, so here's, right, so we take, you know, with Gidel, for all we know, is, you know, is our rich heir. Just going, heir to his family's multi-billion-dollar real estate business. And he's just going out to make his first purchase, and we're turning him into this desperately poor guy starving, right, trying to get, a Drake's coffee cake or something.
Okay.
Around the street. So we don't know, right, so we don't know if that's fair or not.
Okay.
So, but the implication seems to be you should give it back now that you know. And his answer is a very odd answer. Where he says, well, it would be unlucky. Yes, Avi.
To me, this implies that he's already removed himself from being a Rasha by saying that I didn't know. Because, like, I'm not bad, but I don't want to do something bad for me now.
Okay, but whoever's talking to him thinks that he still has a duty, or that it would still be better if he gave it back.
He's better, but right now he's neutral.
Okay, or he's...
And he says to one person is saying it would be good for you to do this, and he's saying no.
Aha, uh-huh, okay. So you have to figure out where we are on the y-axis.
Right. And in fact, we found one of the Nisqad of Gemara,
yeah.
Which is also the Nisqad of Miri, has this from a source of Mimer and someone else that says exactly this point.
Yeah. It's Amar Ma Mishe Mochet something Rishona in the Siman Bracha or something like that.
Right. Yeah. So that's right. It's he right, it's sort of, right. So it's so you want to think he's neutral? It might be that it's still bad. It's just
he thinks he's neutral.
All right, you think he thinks he's neutral? Okay, we might think he's not neutral, but we might even think, even though it's generally a bad idea, but your first land is a big enough deal.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to get it right. The question is, how big is it? Right. Why do we care about simanim? Why does that any halachic significance at all? So you're saying basically it has none. It's just the claim I can choose which right well, I can choose not to do something, and I would say even stronger, maybe it's strong enough that right that you even that. Your self-interest allows you to outweigh a minor moral consideration.
Well, I think we also care about Simanim. At least,
they believe in it.
Yes, okay, right, that depends on how strongly. Yes, so you want to answer?
Yeah, first of all, in the Ani case,
mm-hmm.
Is it clear that the interloper knows?
The nut lohimela.
Yeah, it takes it from him, I think that's right, yeah.
It takes it from him, it doesn't take it from the owner.
Yeah, well, he takes it, he...
We have to figure out what the case is.
I mean, I know Rashi thinks it's something like Hefker or something that's not.
Yeah, it's only I think it's not. I don't think it's. I don't think it's Nibla. I think if the other person comes and takes it from him, does he take it out of his hand or out of the owner's hand? Depends on what his relationship with it is.
Right, and hence ignorance doesn't.
Release. Yes, but I don't think there is ignorance in the Ani case. The question is, does ignorance make a difference or not? And that depends whether you think Hashtanami Nitzva means that you're still a Russia, or it means even though you're not a Russia, but you should be better than, right? You shouldn't just strive not to be a Russia, you should strive to be a Tzaddik. Right, I think that's the right. That's what Avi wants to argue, is that we all agree you're not a Russia anymore. Yes, Eli.
I think it's interesting that you call Russia instead of saying, like, Derech Rishonis. Derech Rishonis.
Yeah, well, it says Nikra Russia, as opposed to Minhag Rishut.
Is that stronger?
So, one of the questions we have to figure out is, what is the relationship between a Ramoy and a Rasha? Are they just different layers? Is one of them stronger than the other? Does one of them include the other? We don't know. Right, we have two halachic outcomes. Right? One is Minhag, or two quasi-halachic outcomes. Nikra Rasha seems to generate the possibility that you have to give it back, maybe even a lesser level of Nikra Rasha, because even if you found it afterwards, which we're suggesting you're not a Rasha, you still have to give it back. But the question is, when you say you have to give it back, is that a legal statement or is that a moral statement? Because if it's a legal statement, why should it be overpowered by it's unlucky?
It sounds like a moral statement, because we're calling it a Nikra Rasha. Sounds like you're making a moral judgment on who he is as a person.
So that's what we're going to find out by tomorrow, right? Does Nikra Rasha just mean a formal judgment? Or does it have very concrete halachic consequences? All right, that you are now a Russia. There are all sorts of interesting statuses. Maybe we can push you into pits. Who knows? Right. If we called you, say Nikra Mechal Shabbos Vohude Vodazara. Right. 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 So this, we don't know, and we'll see this. Right, there's a long machlok about what exactly Nikra Russia means. Okay. So the ending of it is, right, so he says, you know what? So I won't sell it to him, but I will give it to him. But Rav Gittel won't take it because he doesn't like taking gifts, because he has his own Soni Matanos Yechia, and not having managed to avoid Harim Lo Achal and all those things, right? So he still, right? So he needs something more for life, and that something more for life you need is to be Soni Matanos. So he's fine. So in the end, we have this standoff where nobody gets the land at all. And now the question is, do we think that nobody gets the land, and so the good thing is everyone's a hero again, and all our rabbis are heroic, or this is ridiculous? Right, that's the question. Right, how are we supposed to read this? I think Rabbi Levine, when he comes, will talk. We'll to some extent talk about this. If we read this as a story and not as a halachic case. Right, so we have to watch the evolution, right? So we have a legal rule in the Mishnah. Then we have two cases that appear to be case law. And then we have something which starts off as case law and then turns into something that would fit into different kinds of stories other than law stories. Right, yes, Shannon?
I guess I'm a little bit confused about how the case law applies to the rule. In the Mishnah, we're talking about, is the marriage valid or not? Or in these cases, I don't think that's the question at all. Like, no one asks, like, is he really married to this woman?
That's true.
He wanted for his son. They're saying, like, was it okay? Was it a bad thing for him to do?
So the interesting, so let's deal with, we have three fundamental legal possibilities. The transaction is invalid. The transaction is valid. The transaction is valid, but you have to undo it. Right. The Mishnah says the transaction is valid.
Right.
The Braita says the transaction is valid, but there's a moral difficulty. There's a moral difficulty with it.
So do we assume that means we're going to force them to undo
it? Does that assume we mean that, right, that means so what? Or does it assume it means we force it to undo it? We have two cases which don't suggest we force you to undo it, but you can't really undo a marriage. Right, that's part of the challenge. You can undo a sale, but you can't undo it. Can't really undo a marriage. So the first case we said there might not be shlichut. The second case there seems to be shlichut. The third case there clearly is not shlichut.
So the strongest, and the third case is the one which mentions the idea that the moral problem is so severe that you might actually have to give it back.
Which, conveniently, we're talking about land and not marriage.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Okay, yes, though.
Can a woman marry a son and a father?
Consecutively.
Consecutively.
No.
Yes.
No. You become an heir immediately. So you could, yes, it couldn't be undone.
No, so then this is a great, because then the first two cases are clearly where there's no way you can rectify it.
Aha, uh-huh. And so this is the first, well, but the land case, the land case.
No, because there's no way he could possibly own the land.
Ah, so that's interesting. The interesting question is whether the Balei Zroa, that's enough units in our readings now, we have it, right? Because if the Balei Zroa are the original owners, so they can't do anything to stop you from reselling it. But if the Balei Zroa are the neighbors, so right, so when Rav buys it, they're the co-op board, and he couldn't resell it to,
yeah.
Right,
Rav. I mean, that to me seems very weird with the reading, because I'm like, then we could just buy it and then sell it, it'd be fine, right?
Okay, so I accept that as one or the other, that now we have enough community between the readings.
It has to be the co-op board.
So then these first two cases are actually, it's not that Minhag Ramaut does not have to be undone, but Rav Shad does have to be undone. You can't mix up something.
So if you take this reading, it's a very nice reading of the claim that actually you should always undo it, just we didn't bring the possibility up the other cases because it wasn't possible.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a, then we have this sort of wrinkle that, you know, what happens if, you know, that you try to undo it, but you can't, where does that leave you? Right? How do we judge him in the end? He tried to give it back, but the other person, right?
Well, we're comparing the cases. I don't know if that's like comparable, right? The case where we try and make it up is the case of Ani Mahabek and Harara.
Well, the case we try to make it up is this case of Lynn.
Which we're calling a case of Ani Mahabek and Harara.
Well, which was a case of Ani Mahabek and Harara until he claimed he didn't know about it.
Right, but even so, that's the...
If you want to say Kal Vachomer.
No.
If I had to give it back, even if he didn't know about it, then Kal Vachomer should have to give it back if he did know that the Ani was not there.
Oh, sure, but I don't know why that's relevant to the first two cases of Masha, Sasa, Elish, and
okay, so you want to argue that we started for the Mishnah, we had two cases that were like the Mishnah, and then we went off into a totally new case.
Which is very similar, but...
Yeah, but which is thematically connected, but not
right,
linear.
But right.
No, the first case is a case of... we're not sure about Shlichut, but there's a relationship between the Shliach and the sender. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. The second case is a case of clear Shlichut, and the third case is no Shlichut and a relationship between the buyer and the non-buyer. Right?
Yeah.
So the three examples, and each case is in, like, clearly three examples of how do you handle someone interfering with the purchase.
Okay. No, I'm saying that. I'm saying
yeah,
clear
no,
case
no,
is a very different, is a very different type of.
I'm open to.
Yeah, but the Anima Habit with Harara is just like sort of for the big reveal, right? So you have the Natan moment of like, you're the man. Okay, so like, sucks to
be you. Anima Habit Harara is a halakhic archetype.
No, I hear that, but I don't think you don't need that. That's just for the like nice little conversation that you have in there. And like, you can make a stronger claim from there, you can make some other claim from there. I don't think you have to. The point is still that you have two people, one interloper into a purchase, and what is this halakhic responsibility to the other person?
It might be a
right.
halakhic responsibility. It's just a moral interjection.
Okay, but the halakhic or moral responsibility in a case of Ani Mahabek v'Harara, in a case where someone was going through whatever motions of buying something and still had a chance to buy it and still was at this point where he had a way and I grabbed it from him, is much higher than than the other cases of where there was a shliach.
Right, but that's not brought as the example. It's not that the ma'aseh here, example number three, is Ani Mahabek
v'Harara,
right?
Well, that's what I'm
saying. Still the
mob. Yeah, but an Ara is not Harara, and Ragil is not an Ani.
Right, I'm assuming Ani Mahab Harara means someone trying to buy something that they couldn't otherwise get, so they're all called an Ani Lagabe it.
Okay, those are lots. Those are assumptions. I don't know. I'm open to all these things. And again, we don't know what the relationship of case law to academic law is. Right? Is this just a list of three cases on the same theme? Right. Compare and contrast. Are they sequential? Right. The problem is relationship. Why they don't seem to be sequential? Right. Because we start no shlichus, shlichus, no shlichus. So we don't know why these stories are in the order they are in. Maybe
that's
not.
Like the key word, and that's what we're trying to decipher is what Minhag Ramaut, like where does that come from?
Oh, we want to know what Minhag Ramaut and Nikra Rasha.
It comes to the personal relationship of the person to the of the buyer to the non-buyer, relationship of the buyer to the object being bought.
Yes. Exactly.
That would be a nice relationship
about
order here.
It would be. Yes. Okay, so I figured you have bias for order.
that can be a positive or it can be, you know, it can lead to overreading. Those are both possible. And again, I said, to me, how you read the outcome is a challenging question. Do you think Rav Gittel is wrong in not accepting the land because he's leaving the other person having committed a and the act of a rasha without
there has to be a workaround, right? This is like, there's no way to sell it to another party, or to give it to another party who will then sell it to Rav Gittel. That seems like,
I don't know, you know, what it means, you know, so again, if I'm reading it as law, so then this ending is irrelevant. Right? If I'm reading it as, right, if I'm reading it as character, then it's fascinating. Because all of a sudden we're discovering that, you know, what looked like a commercial transaction, as we saw in the previous story, that commercial transactions are really social transactions. Right? And really what gets involved here is pride. Right? Right? If two people, right, you know, is it really just about these halakhic principles? Well, I don't want to sell my first land, I never accept a gift. or is this ego? And is there in a real sense of self-definition? Right, I'm not willing to accept something from you. If you read it as a story, it becomes very different. And you have to figure out to what extent is that? Right, is this, have we left the realm of law? And is that a useful category? Right, to our halachana got it to usefully distinct categories in Talmud. Yes.
Especially when we call it ara de rabbanan.
Yes.
Right, so Rashi glosses it, Hefka v'Talmidim, is that?
Yes.
But that's not necessarily the only way. It could be like a tongue-in-cheek thing, saying, oh yeah, that's the rabbi's land, right? They can't agree on it. It's there, it's still.
Yeah, Hefka v'Talmidim is an right? So Rashi saves it, right? Because we think it's going to stay there forever. Right? And, you know, when they have this, we think that this land is going to lie fallow forever, and Rashi says, no, it's the place for the poor students can get their stuff. Right, so Rashi, right? So Rashi has a beautiful ending, right? The Beit Medrash guys have their park, right? But as opposed to that's the land where everyone walking through town, right? So that's the rabbi's land, right? Why is that the rabbi's land? I read this. So I'll tell you what I was thinking of. It's one of my favorite midrashim, is talking about why Yiftach's daughter was sacrificed. Because he made a neder. So we're going to engage what I call it, and a guy says, I think you can engage in a halachic suspension of disbelief, right, where you're allowed, things can happen that aren't true halachically in the context of the story, like the same way that in a story you can presume, okay, in this fictional universe, right, gravity, there's no gravity, right, or you can, there's faster than light travel, so you're allowed to make one false halachic assumption in a story. So the false halachic assumption in this story is that a neder to kill somebody is binding. Now, granting that a neder to kill somebody is binding, why doesn't Yiftach go and be matir neder? Right? Because just because it's binding doesn't mean you can't do hatar. So the answer is that Yiftach is the nasi and Pinchas is the kohen gadol, and Yiftach says to Pinchas that political authority transcends religious authority, so you have to come to be matir neder. And Pinchas says to Yiftach, no, religious authority transcends political authority, so you have to come to be matir neder. And they both refuse to come to each other, and the line is in Targum, translated Hebrew, is Vein Shnehem Nev Dehanara. Between the two of them, the girl was lost, because the male ego is where women suffer, and so it's the great feminist midrash. It's like, so you usually use it when people say the rabbis didn't get it. No, you couldn't write a midrash like this unless you get exactly like what the feminist critique of the male-dominated law is. Then the problem is, once they get it, so the system is produced by people who did get it, so the critique loses force. One of these, right? Catch 22, right? You know, inverted things. But so I read the story, right? This is the kind of thing that happens, right? Rabbis get into standoffs, and the law freezes because you become personally involved, and you take your personal feeling and you project it onto the law, and now the laws become your proxies, and we end up in a teku because it's right. 'Cause there's no way of resolving it. So that's the way I first read the story. That Arad Rabbanan becomes a sort of, you know, that's the place where the rabbis don't. Rashi reads it very differently. And Rashi just says it becomes a park, or a place for the rabbis where the Talmud can get their thing. Okay, that I think is excellent progress. Get ready to declare share over. Go do something recreative.
Oh, wow.
Can I plug you?
Yes.
Oh.